welcome to the My Interest This Week podcast. My name is Jason Anderson, and I'm recording this for the week ended November 21st, 2020. In this episode, I'll be talking about trying to get that Raspberry Pi thing with CFS that I was talking about last week, and also I'll go into a bit of detail on why designing multiplayer shooter maps is hard. So I'll first start off with the story of what I tried to do to actually get that darn Raspberry Pi NAS thing to work. It was a bit busy this week, so I didn't have a lot of time, you know, leading up to the holidays. So I had to do this over the course of maybe one or two days, at least with the Raspberry Pi NAS. So anyway, I went to try to find the SSD, another SSD for my Raspberry Pi. When doing a RAID 1 or something like that, mirroring that I have, they usually recommend that you have two disks or two storage whatever that are of similar size. So what I did was that I went over to Fry's Electronics because I probably thought that they would have a drive. Though, to be frank, I didn't even know that they were still open. I mean, over the past year, we've had this break, you know, we've had the pandemic, and places like that have really struggled. Or, in fact, over the past few years, when I'd go to a local Fry's store, most of the place was barren. There was barely any people there. The shelves had very little merchandise. But I just walked around anyway, trying to find what I had to get. As luck would have it, I found a case for my Raspberry Pi, and then I tried to find an SSD. I mean, you would think that a place like this would have an SSD. I tried looking in the usual place where they had the drives, but they had moved so much stuff around, and I felt, well, the place looks so, I was too depressed by the look of the place to ask a store employee where they kept the drives, so instead I went to the Best Buy across the street. I tried for nearly 15 minutes to find the drives and the SSDs. I did find a bunch of other cool stuff, tablets, Apple stuff, car stuff, but I eventually had to ask a store employee where the drives were. Luckily, the guy was very knowledgeable, and he showed me what they had. Some of it included, you know, these nice-looking external drives that were about 1 or 2 terabytes, but the smallest external drive they had was 500 gigs, but what I needed was a 256 gig drive to match my other SSD. So he goes, he then shows me the internal 256 gig one, but the problem with that one was that I would have also had to get an enclosure for it, and that would have just been too much overhead. I mean, it would have costed too much, would have easily cost me $80, and also it would have been too much for the Raspberry Pi anyway. So instead I got a 256 gig thumb drive. That should help for now. So anyway, I go home only to realize that I needed also a micro HDMI connector for the Raspberry Pi 4. Originally, what I had used was this touch screen for the Raspberry Pi, but this time I wanted to actually use a monitor or something like that. So I purchased the cable the following day. I put the Raspberry Pi 4 in the case, and that was actually a really nice experience. I mean, actually putting something together, but whatever. And tried booting the card that had Ubuntu on it. I had placed, I'm trying to remember which version, I think it's Ubuntu 20.04.1, the server version. I then tried plugging it in, and it didn't start. The fan spun up, but the OS didn't boot. And I was trying my darndest to figure out why not. I tried restarting it, changing around some of the files on the SD card. I even swapped out the OS for, I think it's Raspberry Pi OS, but I couldn't get the darn thing to boot properly. And then I figured out it was the case itself. From what I could tell, the wires that lead to the fan are coming in contact with the metal case. the wires for the case, or I'm sorry, for the fan, are put onto the GPIO, the general purpose input output on the Raspberry Pi, and that is in turn hitting the case. What may be happening is that it's shorting to ground, or at least preventing the OS from booting. So for the next couple of seconds, because I don't know who the heck designed this case, I tried unscrewing the lid from it. Holy cow. I don't know what the heck, or maybe it's something that I did with the darn thing. I tried, some of the screws were stripped, or maybe one or two of the screws were stripped. Heck, I had to pry it open with another screwdriver. But anyway, I got the lid off. So after getting the lid off, I popped the I didn't remove the SD card. I just tried powering on the Raspberry Pi again, and lo and behold, Ubuntu, it finally booted up. Sadly, that was only just the first part of this problem. The Wi-Fi on it wouldn't connect to the access point that we have, and I didn't really know why. I mean, Raspberry Pi OS, that one connected wonderfully. Also, I mean, heck, I would love to hook this up to the Wi-Fi router that we have, but currently I can't really do that. Anyway, working on this problem for about 30 minutes yielded me nothing. I tried changing the login credentials for the Raspberry Pi. I tried messing around with configuration files in the Etsy directory. I tried messing around with WA supplicant that file in the Etsy directory. Well, actually, I don't even think it did use that. I tried looking for the interface file in the Etsy network directory, though I don't think it uses that either. I finally figured out that that Ubuntu server, it uses apparently something called NetPlans. In all my years of using OSs that were based upon Ubuntu, I have never heard of this NetPlans thing. Sheesh, I mean, usually you would use maybe the IP command, or you would use maybe ifconfig. Well, I mean, IP actually replaced ifconfig, but whatever. I don't know what the heck is Canonical doing with this. Whatever the case may be, I had figured this out from a Stack Exchange answer, and so I just wrote out some NetPlans commands and restarted, I think, one or two daemons, and lo and behold, I got the Wi-Fi working. Finally, I was going to then go through with the storage. I hooked up the thumb drive and my SSD, the two storage devices, and I tried to get them to go to use RAID 1. Or at least that's what I wanted to do. It turns out that the Raspberry Pi 4 can't supply enough voltage to power the two drives. This is something that I had kind of wondered about and had kind of feared, and this had confirmed it. So that's when I had to break out my old USB hub. This one is self-powered, and so I could just hook it into the Raspberry Pi, and it would detect the drives. Finally, I created the ZFS pools and tried using some other stuff. Well, I didn't have, at that point, I didn't have a lot of time to really try out the storage capabilities of the mirrored drives. I mean, I had set them up to be RAID 1. Hope to God that I need to double check that. But I haven't been able to set up a network share with it. The tutorial that I had used, and by the way, I'll link to this into the description, that suggested using this program called Cockpit, which is a server management front end, to make the server do things. I did try sharing them. I did try looking at the load that they have. I did try, and it's a nice little piece of kit, but when I finally have some more time, I'll try and set up a network share so that I can do network storage and backup and stuff. But now that project is a bit of on hold, I'm now looking into my other project, which is, again, that multiplayer game I've been talking about. Now, in this case, I'm trying to design a multiplayer shooter map, which is actually pretty difficult. So these need to be designed with a couple of things. I think it's actually with a bunch of stuff in mind, but I'm going to try to just summarize it. So I need to figure out where the players can go, where they can hide, what risk and reward they may have in this place. Does the place have a certain sense of balance to it? It's kind of interesting because just because the map is symmetric doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be fun or it's going to be balanced. Sometimes if you even have different parts of it that are, shall we say, asymmetric, you might be able to make it fun. So, for instance, with some risk and reward. I'll talk about that in a few minutes, though. Now, this is made more difficult by the fact that these maps will be procedurally generated. At first, when I tried designing these maps months ago, I just used something that was pretty much randomly generated. It would just, you know, generate up a course of some kind for the players to maybe run. Those looked too, I want to say random, too sporadic, nothing that would really challenge them. Of course, the thing is that I was just testing out the map generating algorithm. And now more recently, I'm just kind of look at this and thinking, well, how about I make it something that they can, no, I can't do that. How about I just, instead, I just thought, okay, screw it. I'm just going to look at what, you know, Activision, or rather what the Call of Duty games and what bunch, or what the Halo maps, how those are designed. So the COD maps are made with various routes to run. For instance, in, let's see here, what was one that I was, one of the maps that I was looking at was this one called Vacant. I think it's from Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, or I think it was Call of Duty 4. But most COD maps, they're made with easy to see routes. So when a player spawns in or respawns in, they'll usually have two or three different routes that they can move in. Also, from what I've heard, I don't think this is always the case because I haven't played a lot of Call of Duty, but the powerful weapons, they're usually in places that are, shall we say, barren. They don't have a lot of cover around them. Now, this sets up a little bit of risk and reward for the player, which is kind of nice. On the other side of this, there is cover for players to, hide behind. That one can be a bit of trial and error. Some parts of the map may have too little coverage, and so this is an easy spot for players to be sniped or to be possibly unfairly defeated. But then again, there are some places that can have too much coverage, which doesn't look very inviting for the player and could overthrow the balance of the map. So that's a little something that has to be weighed out. The other stuff that I looked at, some of the other maps that I looked at, were from some of the Halo games. So from the original Halo, I looked at, I think it was Blood Gulch. That one's fairly symmetric, though it does have some interesting little twists to it. So if I recall, near the center of the map, they have a hill of some kind that's to prevent some of the players from just, say, standing around the base and sniping at other players from a distance. The next map that I looked at was called Zanzibar from Halo 2, which is actually an abandoned military base. This is a nice little thing because it is designed, just the aesthetic of it, to look as though someone, soldiers or Marines or whoever trained there. Though the biggest attraction of the map is the large wheel spinning at the center. So what players can do is they can use that to get to a high ground. Or what's also nice is, if I recall, at the center of the map, there is a powerful weapon that, it was around the wheel where they could get this powerful, sword of some kind. So that's really cool to see it at the center of the map, or at least near the center of the map. Stuff like big wheels are good to have. It's a nice attraction because it helps the player to find their way around the map, serving as a marker. In the maps for my game for Black Wars, there will be paths for the players to transverse, as well as landmarkers to guide them. I might just have maybe a tower of some kind, or a large mountain, or who knows what else. How items and weapons will be placed is still yet to be determined, though I have maybe one or two ideas for maps. So, for instance, maybe we'll just have a waterfall, or, I don't know, maybe we'll just have a dungeon setting. Or I have this wild idea for this sleeping giant of some kind that just tosses and turns sometimes. Well, every time, you know, that the players, you know, play on the map, he's moved around, or he's moved his legs. Though, of course, that's something I still have to work out. I don't really know what I'll do with that idea. That's pretty much all that I've had going on over the past week or so. And this is a good place to stop the episode. If you want to get in contact with me, you can look me up on Twitter at FakeJasonA, or you can look me up on Mastodon at ertain@mass.linuxgamecast.com. You can also look at my blog, jasonsblog.place. Just remember, you can't get to the top of the mountain if you don't aim for the stars. I hope to see you next week.